10. This meeting was scheduled and set listed for 10 o'clock. Welcome at this meeting. Special welcome to MEC for Finance from the Free State, from the Rockman, with a team of the Provincial Treasury that made an exceptional effort to be here this morning. They engaged with me yesterday, and they flew in yesterday afternoon, late last night. That's why I say a special welcome to you. I hope you can fly out this afternoon. The flying out is better than coming in to land, because then the plane reduces its speed and the wind take over. Yeah, and welcome to Treasury. You're also here. Thank you very much. This is a continuation of our series of meetings with the Provincial Treasuries. Friday we'll be meeting case at end. I've got a cabinet meeting today, that's why we couldn't engage with them today. They were scheduled. And then we will be coming to the end and compile our report that will also be submitted not only to the NCP for adoption, but also to the Minister of Finance, giving the Minister a picture of what is happening in the provinces, because that will be prior to the Budget Council. That is also scheduled, that has been postponed. So that's a very important oversight meeting we are conducting to look at the whole fiscal position of South Africa, not only national government, but including the 9 provinces, that we get the real picture. And we do our fiscal oversight over the provincial departments in their respective included public entities in line with the strategic goals and the requirements of the PSMA. But very important is Section 81 to the end, Section 86, in terms of consequence management. We will also assess the extent to which the province's finances are in good standing and whether the provincial treasuries comply with the PSMA. And the Constitution. So that's why we look at the fiscal position of the province. Treasury will do their presentation, but in the presentation they capture what you have actually submitted already to them, the figures per department, blah, blah, blah. So when you come as the provincial treasury, we've seen the figures. I think there are some discrepancies between the figures of the province and the treasury. You must just explain to us why. You're doing well in revenue collection. What are you doing? What good message can we give to other provinces, for example, Northwest or Limpopo or Mpumalanga? What can we learn from each other? That's the other reason we are engaging with the treasuries, to learn from each other. Good practices, how are you addressing your accrual, unauthorized expenditure, fruitless, wasteful, and irregular expenditure? What are you doing? What's your action plan? What are you doing in terms of officials that broke the law? We want to hear that as well. Because that's the questions we get when we are in constituencies and meeting with the public. They ask us the question, what are you doing? So very welcome, and apologies, Mr. Andrew, just Mr. Isaac, yeah, he's off sick. Honorable Mohai is submitting an apology. He's in a meeting, but it seems to me he can't join us, and the other members, it seems to me the program meeting hasn't adjourned, so they are there, because we're looking at the third term program of the NCUP. With that short introduction, Mrs. Karekwa, over to you. You're welcome to take us through. We also have the Office of the AG here, the Auditor General. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable
Chairperson. You've got these documents? The one. Thank you. Right.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, MCH Good morning, colleagues. In terms of our numbers, we have used the preliminary numbers that we published at the end of March, as well as the individual KFMA. So now, the province, the pre-audited, the numbers that have been submitted to the AG, has versus that small for reflectivity in our numbers. But I would think that the picture stays the same. In terms of what we do in our work of playing oversight role over the provincial government finances, we do coordinate the budget process through benchmarking. So we meet with the head of Department of Treasury and other colleagues in December, normally January, to go through their budget and see whether 2007 to 2022 we have been adequately funded and see and advise where we can in terms of how we take the method forward. We do also continuously monitoring the analysis of approach of spending as expected, and also part of it we, as I've just highlighted now, we publish on a quarterly basis the expenditure reports of provinces. We also do conditional grant monitoring reporting, and we're just busy now with the rollover coordination process with provinces to request rollovers for money on the conditional grant that is not spent in the previous financial year, where the money has already been transferred to them. Also, we ensure we enforce compliance and interventions, which includes withholding and stopping. And stopping these affects in education from the education infrastructure grant because of poor spending. We also do the test. We normally visit provinces after the test quarter spending, and also we just concluded now infrastructure business for provinces. After all of these reports, we eventually provide a briefing to the minister and MECs through the budget council. And also part of what we do, we provide capacity or training to provincial department officials. And also where we can, we also support provincial drivers in terms of areas where they identify where we can work better to improve how they best support the provincial department. In terms of the next slide of adjustment, the literacy, money, also partly this money was the response for mass sports because there is, I think, a pilot project that I'm busy doing. And also, I think probably they got also some rollover there. And also, the province did adjust their budget by 227 million, despite that the province is not cash plus, if I could use that way, like other provinces. In terms of spending, the free state spent 99.99% of their budget and underspent by 296. But I understand that that 296 probably now is lesser, a little bit lesser than what it is that we have. In terms of the next slide, education did get adjustment of 141 during the adjustment budget, and they have underspent. The main area of understanding in their case was goods and services, and the worry there was the issue of the LTSM, that they underspend on LTSM, and also property payment in the sense that we hope that they have made sure that utilities, payments for utilities have been done so that we don't owe municipalities, because it's been a challenge. Also, the biggest worry is the capital spending in the previous financial year, hence there was money in the reallocation to keep it in. The issue there has been the overspending. They have overspent on compensation of employees. But I must say that we can see that the efforts of the provincial treasurers were very good, because in the previous financial year, which is 2015-16, they overspent their compensation of employees by 450, if I'm not mistaken, million. So now we see that in this year they've overspent by only 212 million, so which is a big provinces which had to address this. Health are overspent by 37 million. Mainly they do have pressure, and their pressure has been on goods and services in their case. And I see that the program where they mostly overspend was the district health services, where primary health care is. Because if you look at their provincial hospital services and central hospital services, where university is, they've underspent in that regard. So the pressure mainly is on the primary health care. With regards to social development, that underspending that is based mainly on the CAPEX, on the capital spending, on the substance abuse facility that is being built. With regards to economic development, I think the understanding that is mainly on goods and services and COE. And I must indicate that if you look at, I analyze the goods and services, most of the departments have underspent on consultants, business advisory services. So now, and this item was increased during adjustment. So I'm not sure what was the rationale, because most of these departments have underspent on this item. Actually, they either underspend the amount that they received during adjustment on that area. Public works, they had an issue last year, but I just think on the same, it's probably in the court, because they had an issue of property made payments in that regard. Because, I mean, as the province has obviously also built so many facilities, therefore, the money that they had for property payments was not enough in that regard. With regards to compensation of employees, the overspending here is mostly education plus police, roads and transport, and a little bit of office of the premier. With regards to the goods and services, I've already indicated that the biggest issue there that we are worried about is the underspending on ATSM, the learning support material. And also the medical supplies in health has underspent. So I'm not sure, because medical supplies have underspent by 80 million and medicine has overspent. So I don't know whether there's an issue also of classification between those items. The underspending on capital, I think this one is purely of education, because the province has challenges with regards to infrastructure in education in the previous financial year. When we go to the next slide, we see that the numbers, personal numbers, have declined in free state education. I think health probably was seen that also the picture of overspending is improving. Health has also, the numbers has decreased by 600. So this one is a worry, because there are two hospitals that are completed in the province. There's very bright Senorita Tradita and Stromzeit, which is, I think it's called Albert Zula. So those facilities are complete, and obviously they need to be operationalized. So that's the worry, that obviously we expect the numbers in health to increase. This one of LKSM, I've already touched on it, so I won't, I'll touch it, because here the department has underspent by 32.6%. I've already indicated that medicine is overspent and medical supplies. Laboratory also was underspent. So some of the issues have already indicated, except that we are saying that the provincial position was not ideal, because we had a negative balance of 212 at the end of the financial year. And the concerning trend of the average monthly cash balance that has declined over the past 3 years, from where in the past 3 years ago they had 593, so now they had a negative 44 at the end of 2016-17, so it's a serious worry. I think the education overspending on competition have already touched on it, and we acknowledge that the decline in account is mainly the temporary education. That they are managing the overspending by through natural attrition and limiting the filling of posts. So So with regards to LTSM, stationaries were delivered on time, but they were delayed in the receipt of top-up text books from publishers. That resulted in delays in delivery of books, probably also resulted in the late payment of suppliers. So infrastructure delivery, I've already touched on it. Here also we were worried about the fact that the department, the overdraft has increased when you compare to March 2016 of the department to March 2017, that the overdraft at the end of March now was 428. So in already in health, I've already included the issue of code to say that in order for the operationalization of the two hospitals in Kloofberg and in the branch, they will need to fill some posts. The issue of Bitumelo, even though Bitumelo is an existing hospital in its case, but I think also because it's been has been upgraded. Actually, this is one of the hospitals that's been on revise, I think, since the beginning of the revise. And I think the contract is still not complete in terms of the refurbishment of the hospital. The issue of poor performance on the substance abuse treatment facility in Botswana, I've already spoken to that, and the issue of rape and taxes in public ways. So the issue here from police, road and transport was the absorption of security staff from public works as well as traffic officials. But here the issue was for me that normally when you move personnel or when you move a function, function must follow the function. So I'm wondering why is it a problem if they've been moved from public works. Human settlements, they've been spending very fast, but there's poor progress in achieving that target. And in 2015, they contributed to 50% of provincial accruals. Now, on the accruals, looking at slide 12, we see that in the case of health, there's been just a slight increase of, let's say, 2 million. But I think the worry is that health has overspent its budget. So it means they don't have, actually, they need to prioritize within their next budget to deal with this pressure. Same would apply with education, because their issue was balancing and most of the understanding is on the ground. So therefore, it's either they have requested a rollover or if they have not, they left surrender that fund to the National Revenue Fund. So the worry also is the increase, the doubling of the accruals in public works and infrastructure to 413 million. And in terms of the roads, also there's been an increase of 26 million. With regards to human settlement, there's been a decline, but it's still a worry in the sense that this department is mostly funded from the conditional grant, so why would they kind of overcommit itself like this? In terms of the fiscal framework, the province tabled a surplus budget, and in that case, the revenue collected from the province is growing, and even in that case, we've been doing really well in this regard. And also, the national transfers are increasing. Education, the growth is okay, and also both education and health and development. Here we've got. I can't say strange, but you see, we have under unallocated funds of food, pre-state gambling and liquor authority underneath, while the rest of the revenue in other provinces is under provincial owners, but it's not their own doing because of an audit finding that says that this gambling must not be part of the provincial owners. So we've got a maybe the OSA General can help us in this regard. Why? Because in other provinces, this issue, this revenue is part of that own revenue and reported monthly to us. But in the case of the they said, no, this revenue should not be reported, in this case, part of the budget of the province or the budget of Department of Economic Development that stressed the situation that we're having. But we're hoping that OAG, our Office of the Accountant General, and the AG must report that it was because there must be consistency of how all provinces report. The next slide is just showing the proportion of MTF budget, how the province is spending. And we see in the case that actually their compensation is just kind of equal to the average what all provinces are spending. So I'll say that they're really doing well, and I think the issue of working hard in education to deal with the numbers is really helping them. And in the sense that it's also not compromising education, as we've seen that the province worked hard. They were even number one in terms of the major results. The next slide. It's all compensation of employees, because now we need to ensure that the people that we have in the system, we have adequate budget for them, and we see that in the first state, in aggregate, their budget is growing by 7.1% currency and 7.4% MTF. But when we look at education, clearly there might be there's going to be some overspending in education in the current year if they don't get additional funding, because as it is, the salary increases for level 1 up to 12 was 7.3, if I'm not mistaken. So in that regard already, because those are the people that are carrying the bulk of compensation of employee expenditure. So we can clearly see that there might be a problem. The one of health is growing by 9.7%, and we're hoping that there's a little bit of room in this budget to ensure that they are able to appoint people for those two hospitals that have been built. We're still saying that in education, I just highlighted now that we are worried about the budget of compensation of employees in the current year and over the MTF. But the LCSM and transfer school social peace and growth and what is for that, and we know that Free State is one of those provinces that are adequately funding transfer to schools. Health is growing adequately, and we're hoping that with regards to laboratory services, they will have some savings, because they do have some gatekeeping mechanism in place. We acknowledge that the province has got cost containment measures in place, and are waiting also on the transversal contracts to have some thresholds to keep potential risk to waste. And even with regards to the public agency rationalization, they are one of those that are ahead, because even in the current year, the whole idea was to incorporate the Free State Tourism Authority into the Free State Gambling and Liquor Authority. So that would mean eventually the province will only have two entities in the province. And we are also saying the revenue has been project. We can see that they are yielding results as their revenue is growing. I think the next slide just emphasizes what we are saying, is that we are worried about salary increases, also particularly in education. We recognize that the bazaars have been moved from education to Office of the Premier in the current year to facilitate the establishment of the Science, Technology, Engineering and Mathematics Academy. That public works and infrastructure might have a shortfall on rates and taxes and property payments. And this affects adversely the municipalities, because if they don't get paid, they're also unable to pay the other entities like the Earthform and Water Board. Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you. As you mentioned, members, this is not your point. When you try to the provincial presentation, I just want to ask the question. The Department of Health is under Section 18 of the PMA, which I recall it from somewhere, I think last year, or budget council, the MEC mentioned it. We pay the visitors NCOP to the Southern Free State, to the Kharit region. I wish him approval. And approval, what's the name of that? Sastron. Yeah, I was on both the buses with us. We had three towns. And health had some issues. And in our engagement, I just sensitized the director from health that was with us. Please remember, sir, you're under Section 18 of the PMA, which is really is controlling you. Because he went to town announcing things. He said, can't do that way. You must first check with your treasury, what can you do before you make an announcement. So we cautioned him. But it was a very, very good visit where we were deployed. MEC, welcome again. I'm coming over to you that you make your input and take us through your presentation.
Thank you, Jason. Good morning, members of our colleagues of National Treasury and Office of the Auditor General. Thanks very much, Jay. I think we were sort of protected from the first part of the storm in the area where we were.
You're very wise in terms
of fortunately, the flood from the mountain is so bad that if you don't come in the day before, you will never be in time for the meeting in the morning here. And we are only flying out tomorrow afternoon, so at least we are safe from the airports and the functioning of airports and the air travel today.
Okay.
I'm going to make some introductory remarks and maybe talk a bit to the socio-economic profile, and then I'm going to hand over to our HOD for the technical part.
I also want you to talk about the drug disease exercise. Because members, our rural provinces had quite a challenge in the distribution of drug disease. Free State, Northern Cape, in a certain sense, Northwest. Because certain things must be corrected. And the Free State's got a reply to that. So please proceed.
Thanks, James. We certainly have comments on that.
I want to listen. Well, the comments you want to listen.
And then at the end, I will also make some concluding remarks. I think our colleague from National Treasury already outlined the small differences in the numbers. We would always have that as we approach end of financial year and submission of audited financial statements. You know the fiscal framework of 2016-17 budget, the fiscal consolidation, the equitable share reviews, the impact it has on our budget. We are not escaping the impact of the compensation of employees and improvement of conditions of service that is continuing to have an impact. We have our own issues that we've raised in Budget Council as all other provinces to say we cannot co-fund the public wage bill. But we all know what was the circumstances and we all bought into it and agreed to it. But going forward, I think all provinces are re-evaluating.
But you are addressing this in some
yes, level. Yes, we are speaking to the details of COE.
Yeah.
Obviously, we try to protect health and education. They are actually both under Section 18. We have tried to reach a stage in health where we want to begin to pull back. But every time we start pulling back, there are issues coming up, which suggest that we haven't reached the financial maturity that we need to reach before we can withdraw from health. I don't even think we are close to reaching a stage in education where we fully grasp the impact of what we're dealing with. We are still in education playing on the periphery. The issues there are much broader that we need to get deeper into. Health, over expenditure this year is, if I can put it like that, sheer negligence. it just needed to have a bit tighter management and keeping an eye on the ball. There was no other real excuses. So there will be consequences. We had it last year in Office of the Premier where an individual misinterpreted the contract, spread illegal expenditure right through provincial government, except the provincial treasury, for which we were very thankful. And there was consequence management, as difficult as it was, but the CFO is on a final written warning. And he will make sure that he doesn't misinterpret the contract again, because that's it. And unfortunately, that is the way to get people to pay more attention to what they are doing. Really, we can sit here and say, yes, there was under expenditure on medical supplies and over expenditure on medicine, and maybe it was misclassification. It's still negligence. That's the bottom line. So we need to just once deal with that and have a bit more focus and attention on the day-to-day issues. The same problem of classification of expenditure is happening in education. And it doesn't help with real estate. We talk until you're blue in the face to your management and mid-management. But the people who punch the numbers are the ones where the problem starts. And they just don't care. Wherever there's money available, that's what gets posted. And somewhere in the distant future, we will sort it out, but we don't get to that part of sorting it out in time. So that's what I'm saying. We need to go much deeper into the issues of education. It's a culture that has taken root and that you have to go and manage back. I think we spend about 99.5% of the budget. That's where our numbers now are. Under expenditure of about 0.5%. In the presentation, we will go deeper into those issues. The infrastructure spending problems in education, both infrastructure and LTSM, there are forensic investigations into exactly those two areas. So partly the investigations caused the delay because we did not want them to continue committing funds before we know what the environment was, and key officials were suspended dealing with infrastructure specifically. The other part is internal problems that people will be saying, no, Treasury is not making cash available. It was an ongoing story for many months that our education department was selling DBE. Until we finally confronted them to say, okay, now, where is the commitment? And then the whole story came out. They only committed the funding in December. The funds were never committed. It was never about the cash not being made available. Now, we're also dealing with consequence management there. Because it created quite a lot of havoc between DBE then reporting to National Treasury that we are withholding cash. And we really took exception to the approach of DBE, that they would run to National Treasury and not check with us because they know that the department is under administration, to get to the real story, what is actually happening here. So that is one of the issues that we wanted to raise, but I'll raise it at the end under intergovernmental relations as well. Because even with the funding that was ultimately forfeited, we got a message from the officials in National Treasury to our Treasury to say, no, pass the ball. Excuse me, it doesn't work that way. By that time, DBE, the minister, had not informed the MEC of Education. They knew nothing. The MEC of Education knew nothing that they must forfeit funds. Now, I'm not going to tell him, but the Minister of Finance has also not told me. Now, we can't reduce these discussions to a discussion amongst officials who's going to decide which balls get passed.
This old and take you back to yesterday's meeting. What did the MEC say? There's officials doing certain things, but don't inform the political division. And that was a measure in the portal that led to intervention in part of the This thing that you just mentioned. And that's where we have to.
Thanks. So, when Mr. Leboni informed us we must pass a bill, he you can imagine my reaction to Mr. Lavoni to say, it's a mess, it doesn't work that way. In much cruder language than that. We are somewhat possible. Because we have somewhat been informed by any minister to say possible. You're possible, David then is possible, we are not possible. Because at that stage we were already in the legislature with two bills from Treasury. Other legislature said to us, we're not dealing with more bills now. We need to pass Appropriation Act. And that was the focus. So yes, we can still go, but I want the IGR procedures to be clarified. It can't be my role to go and tell another MEC in a sector department to say, by the way, then you're losing 80 million rand. And I must be the one to explain why. It can't work that way. When they have min-mix, what do they discuss in those min-mix? Budget Council. We have never discussed these things in Budget Council to say what gets forfeited by whom, when. It's just information. So it's something that I'm sure all provinces will, from time to time, go through this when they are affected. Because we're very happy when we get money from any other province and we don't get. But when the money gets taken away, obviously it's a problem. But the substance abuse treatment center, the underspending, is pretty much the same because the money was allocated the prior year late, reallocated from Northern Cape to us. We also couldn't spend it. Because you can't spend it when it comes barely 2 weeks before the end of the financial year. So it's not, whether it's the system or the processes, we need to do some review and look at it, where can the improvements come? Because it's not necessarily taking us to a better financial management place. No one wants to lose the money. Yes, even if there are deficiencies internally in your province. But certainly we are aware of our own deficiencies, what has led to this situation. But the intergovernmental relations part of it needs some improvement. So I'm sure many provinces would be raising some of these issues. The investigation and education, both LTSM and infrastructure, is not yet concluded. I think we've reached the end. We are almost towards the end of the actual investigation phase. They have moved on to the processing of beginning to identify disciplinary charges and starting the disciplinary procedures itself, the inquiries and so forth. On public works and municipalities, and to a certain extent education as well. Municipalities are under pressure from property rights, taxes, utilities. We have a twofold approach. The one, we are saying to municipalities, yes, we agree. Payments must be made in time, but it must be payments that are verified and that is really due. Do not increase the municipal budget artificially. To try to create a balanced budget when you know that you are artificially increasing property values. Because they see it as an easy source of income. So as municipalities come to us to say, pay, we are saying, just explain to us your AG report that talks lots and lots and lots of stuff about billing. On how your billing is not accurate, on how you are not reading meters, on how this and how that. For the next valuation role processes, provincial government has lodged objections in three municipalities, Mangaung, Dishlabin and Mukak. The others are still starting their processes. So that we can try to manage back the artificial increases on property rates and tax. It was always underfunded even when it was a conditional grant. So it's not a new problem. This thing has a legacy of where it comes from. That we need to go back into history. On schools, we've taken a position, even in PCF it was confirmed, all schools must go on prepaid notice. Because we give money to schools and schools don't pay municipalities. That's a significant part of the problem. Then on, we are in the process of cleaning up asset registers between municipalities and public works. There's a lot of provincial assets that's still on municipal asset registers. and there are assets on our public works asset register that really should be transferred back to municipalities. So that is a process we started about 2 years ago that we are busy dealing with. There are also other projects in departments, especially education, that has not transferred completed infrastructure projects to public works, which means that no one is billing at this stage. So that is another part of it that we are busy dealing with. On the conditional grants, especially you might mention of the...
Let me see just 1 point. Page 4. The 3 bullets that we don't have, that's on that, on your presentation.
Which one is that?
So the last 3. The document we received is not discussed the same as the page 4 that's on the screen.
The second last bullet is the decline of 4.1% in accruals and payables, 68.6% increases in wasteful expenditure between 2015-16 and 2016-17, and in the reported savings of 102 million on cost containment measures at the end of 2016-17. Those points. In the presentation, actually Treasury will go into the further details of that. We did update the presentation, and I think the updated presentation was sent through. Maybe the copies circulated to members are not exactly the same.
No, we didn't. Because to the Secretary of the Comment, and in the center.
Apparently they only gave the updated copy now to this morning to the coordinator.
So that must be distributed to members because
yes.
It must be correctly minuted as well. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
I think on the socioeconomic profile I'm not going to spend too much time on that. You know the population trends, fertility rates, and life expectancy. We are still concerned that the Free State has the lowest life expectancy at birth, both males and females, though there have been increases in the pattern, with males between 2001 to 2006, life expectancy was 44.9, but getting 2011 to 2016, it went up to 52.5, and in females went up from 47.7 to 58%. But it is still lower than other provinces.
You know something better.
As always. so it's something that we are working at to look at what drives these factors. And obviously that would have an impact on our budget and their resource allocation. We also looked at the children under 5 year mortality rate. And there I think we've made significant improvements, so that the infant mortality rate has really come down significantly. We would like to spend a lot of time talking about the grade 12 pass rate, but we will save you from that. I think we have been doing exceptionally well given the financial management challenges in the Department of Education, that we managed to stay in the top 3, if not the number 1.
Yes,
I think that it's the first province to break through the 90% barrier. Let's move on. The provincial contribution to the economy, and I think all smaller provinces will have these challenges. Now, we can sit here and explain this and that about agriculture and mining, and we know all of those things. We know the technical recession is on us. But let us look at how resource decisions are taken and how it impacts specifically small provinces. I'll just give you 2 examples. Why are school books in the Free State distributed by service providers of KwaZulu-Natal? Why are all police vehicles in the Free State serviced in the Eastern Cape? there's a drought, why is water trucked from in Sesotho by companies from Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal? Do you think a provincial economy will grow when agriculture is in decline, mining is in decline? When you have the opportunity to have money from outside the province coming in, even that money goes out. Branding of police vehicles is done by one service provider on the outskirts of Bloemfontein. There's been 200 cars standing for a year. It doesn't make sense. Those are national decisions. That has an impact, like it or not, on how a provincial economy can grow. If we go and look at the major transnational contracts or national contracts, we need to get to a position to say, but let's look at where the service providers are. Surely in the Free State we would have one or two people who can repair cars, who are even authorized by dealerships to repair vehicles. Why should these vehicles all be repaired in Eastern Cape? It makes no sense. So I think if we really want to get to that position from provincial treasury side where we begin to break down to say, let's look at the patterns. When we supply correctional services centers, where does these supplies come from? And I think all provinces should do that. I can tell you now, I can guarantee you that Northern Cape will have the same problems. When it came to the fodder, the distribution of fodder as part of the drought relief, our agriculture department was cut out of the whole supply chain process from procurement to distribution. I have numerous emails and letters where complaints are made to say, but this fodder is simply being dumped. And the farmers where it is dumped is busy selling it. We've had incidences where fodder was literally stored in a boardroom. It was just dumped. There was no plan. Our agriculture department could not make out head or tail, and they were just told, no, stay out of the story, it's not your story. So if we really look at the drought intervention, you know, Jefferson, I've raised this issue of the 6 million of Sesotho. I think it's now 2 years. We're in year two now. December 2015, there is a heat wave in Senegal. There is no water. Sesotho goes, they reprioritize funds because people and animals will die. There's no water. They track water. A year and a half later, we can't get them refunded 6 million rand. We've made the submissions. First it was, no, we can't access the information from National Disaster Management Center, resubmit. So we resubmit. Now we've received a response to say our Provincial Disaster Management Center didn't know. We will still respond to that. We are still engaging with the minister. But if the entire national government cannot refund one small municipality 6 million rand in actual expenditure, not made up expenditure, not projected expenditure of damages or impact to recover, real actual expenditure, then there's something very seriously wrong with our disaster funding model. So towards the end, I'm going to raise it again. But from the onset, what was announced as the funding available and how it has translated, it's two different stories. CASP was supposed to be reprioritized, fodder was supposed to be made available. Whether that fodder has reached the actual farmers who need it is a different story. I know that certain complaints have been forwarded to the Public Protector's Office also for investigation. I think it might be worthwhile for the committee to engage with the Office of the Public Protector on the complaints that is there, specific instances. Where farmers themselves, but this water is just dumped. No one is distributing. So I think things went wrong, and we need to find a way to correct it. Our intergovernmental relations effort, I think, fell apart. in the distribution process. As far as I'm aware, the procurement was done at national level. Provinces had no role to play in that process as well.
From the members, make a note of this. This is taxpayers' money that was used to be allocated in the form of drought relief funding to assist farmers in drought, where provinces had the drought crisis. It's taxpayers' money that we zoom into that and get a reply. I'm very uncomfortable with what I've just been saying. We can't leave it there. No worries. Carry on, ma'am.
I will make available to you, Chairperson, that the complaints that we are aware of that has been submitted to Office of the Public Protector, we will forward it to the committee coordinator and yourself. Maybe other provinces should be asked if they are aware of similar types of complaints. It might be useful to bring all of it together. The projected growth rate of the economy, provincial economy, is 0.3% in 2017. And I think we should just say it's expected to grow further to 1.8%. As it stands on slide 15, it says accelerate. So I think we like to say accelerate, but 1.8% is not really an acceleration. It's a growth. So there is no real major growth prospect that is going to bring about a better picture in the Free State provincial economy as we talk now. We are working with the CEO specifically to see what are the issues, what has been our response. We are not happy with the reports that we currently have on growth against Free State Growth and Development Strategy that talks to NDP. So we have asked that there be a rework of that data and the report itself, so that we can also make available to the committee. I think if we also look at the major catalytic projects that we've been talking about for the past few years, it's Maluti SEZ, it's Human Settlement Project, and so forth. We've just listed them, but we didn't break them down into much further detail. But I think there's clearly a need that we need to relook at the implementation of strategies. And what are we doing and how we can do certain things better to really try to turn around the economic, socio-economic profile of the province. Maybe I should just also mention that we have asked the Ministry of Women in the Presidency to assist us. We want to undertake this year a detailed analysis of the gender composition of our budget. I think it's something that we haven't done. We see, as we allocate resources, it's easy when we talk SASA and universities are easy to break down to women, children, men, what, who benefits from what. We have not done that when it comes to the provincial budget. So that we can see, are we reaching the vulnerable groups that we would want to highlight specifically? Whether it is youth, whether it is women, whether it is young women, the different age analysis and so forth. But I think it will be an interesting study for us to do, and it will also inform us to take conscious resource allocation decisions. I think our Premier has made example to say, when you have, for example, the Woman of the Year builder, and you have an award, and then you realize that this boulder has hardly built 100,000. Have we achieved anything? Are women able, on a resource allocation or an allocation for building houses, for example, are they able to get the same kind of numbers? Are they allocated the same kind of numbers and sizes of projects to really compete with male counterparts that has been in that sector for 20, 30 years? So I think those are the things that we would want to focus on. So that's the one big new study that we would want to do this year. And we will be working with the Ministry of Women. And then also we would be linking up with Gender Commission and the SA Human Rights Commission. So we are tapping into different resources to try to bring this together. So I think on that note, I think I can hand over to our HOD, and then towards the end I'll just make some other concluding remarks again. Thank you very much.
Please proceed.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Looking at the provincial fiscal framework that has also been presented by my colleague from the National Treasury, our equitable share over the entire period is growing on average by 7%.
Can you do this in 15 minutes?
I'll move fast. The total revenue, we are growing at 4.9%, which is a very conservative estimate. We believe that we can do better than that, 10%. But under the circumstances, we decided to rather be conservative than the revenue budget. And our conditional grants are growing at 5.4%, and the overall growth of our budget is 6.6%. Now, looking at the summary of how the department has performed in the 2016-17 financial year, the Department of Education has got a savings or under expenditure of 107 million, which translates to 0.9%. However, as indicated earlier on, we have underspent a lot on infrastructure, more than 200 million, and also overspent on the COE. I must also mention that at the time we budgeted for education, Chairperson, we knew that our COE would have been under budget, but the approach was to rather work it down. Given the allocated financial resources, we couldn't have quickly budgeted for it. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had money for food and services that would have been possible for the training to work for that. So the approach was to rather focus on strategies to reduce the impact of fuel on our budget. Hence, one of the approaches was to reduce the number of farm schools and ensure that we reduce also the number of teachers that are in excess and all that. There are quite a number of focus areas and also areas where we're reducing costs, especially unnecessary costs that we could live without. We have, through the cost containment measures, reduced our funding expenses by 14 million in the Department of Education now.
You reduced traveling expenses by 14 million?
Yes.
So you're checking where every vehicle is going to come back?
There's still much to be done. I believe that we can still...
There's a lesson to learn, yeah. Especially for my province. If you look at the traveling expenses, you
Thank you very much. We would also be liberating on technology to cut on traveling expenses over and above and means of restricting traveling officials within that department. The Department of Health, MEC, has already highlighted the over expenditure of 34 million, and the department spends 0.4% above the allocated budget. I would not talk to all the departments. I think I should talk to the Department of Police, Roads and Transport, that we have had an over expenditure there as a result also of extended hours by traffic officers on the roads, especially during December season and Easter season. The next slide. Under economic classification, Chairperson, would notice that compensation of employees means a big challenge, 215 million over expenditure, mainly from the Department of Education. I've highlighted that. The goods and services over by 16 million. And overall, we have a deviation of 167 million variance on our expenditure, which translates to 99.5% expenditure. Trying to move as quickly as possible because we've got too many slides. I want to do compensation of employees further, but I must just mention there, Chairperson, that whilst we have overspent on COP, this basically relates to the conditions of improvement of services that are continuously not fully funded. We don't see that during wage negotiations processes, normally the staff assess that the salaries will be much higher in terms of growth than the allocated funds of the growth of our budget. And that would have a huge impact, especially on the because that department is meant to serve. The preliminary over expenditure checking on goods and services is mainly from the Department of Education and Health, and the over expenditure of education relates to the utilities, whilst overspending in the health was due to inter-facility patient transfers, that is the transportation of patients from one facility to the other when they get transferred. The provincial treasury has also underspent on goods and services on earmarked funding. This is for interventions that we are implementing in various departments, especially the intervention to reduce irregular expenditure in the Department of Health, the Department of Education, and the Department of Human Services. We are working very hard. We have irregular expenditure that ranges from 2010 till now that has not been investigated. We're investigating all that irregular expenditure. We are putting it into the regular expenditure register so that we can deal with it accordingly. So we are at an advanced stage with that process. There is there with random documentation, but I think we're making good progress there. Spending on non-core items, Chairperson, I believe if you look at this slide, you see that we have basically saved about 102 million rand in the 16-17 financial year on non-core items. But the areas where we are focusing on, especially in reducing expenditure. I'll skip to the Department of Education. Chairperson, we have underspent on independent schools, public special schools, ECDs and examinations, which are basically transferred to schools within the department. And we have also underspent by 280 million on program 6 as a result of the infrastructure program. MEC has indicated that we had some investigations there that also impacted on the implementation of our infrastructure program. Over and above that, the infrastructure unit committed funds very late. And again, we do not necessarily have sufficient human resource capacity in that department to run with the infrastructure program of the department.
So the investigation in infrastructure programs is delaying your spending in that program?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
It helped to an extent, I must say so, Chair, because we've suspended some of the officials. It's a department that has got little capacity, if no capacity. Then in the process, we still had to suspend people. And therefore, that would also delay the implementation of projects. I won't talk to the over expenditure on the floor here again. We can move over to the Department of Health. The Department of Health has spent overall 9 billion or 100.4%, which means it has overspent its own budget, Chairperson. We have actually overspent 4 million. Of the allocated budget, which is 0.4%. The over expenditure there is on the legal cases that we are confronted with in that department. We believe that there's a need for the sector to come up with an approach to deal with this. The rate at which these cases are coming and eating into our budget is very high. And we have underspent with medical supplies. NEC has spoken to that. The medical supplies was we have spent overspent on medicine. And if you look at the figures, they actually cancel each other. But this are some of the things that we have to give attention to when it comes to planning within that department, especially the finance environment. And we have intervened in managing compensation of employees within the department, the chairperson. We have issued instruction notes to that effect, where we have frozen the personal sanction on appointment of staff, and there is a process that needs to be followed before an appointment can be made in each and every department. That is, surgery, we have to satisfy itself that the post is on the structure. We also have to satisfy ourselves that post is funded. It's a process that obviously sometimes frustrates the department, but it's actually assisting us in carrying over expenditure and managing the cost of employees within our province. I won't go through all the instruction notes that we have issued, but I must also mention that we have conducted the headcount within a number of departments. The Department of Health, we have conducted at treasury the headcount, and we have covered more than 20,000 employees of that department. And during the process, only one official could not be verified within the department, but should be in health. We have also conducted a headcount of 1,000 officials within the Department of Education, and only 7 officials could not be physically verified. The payment of salaries of the 7 officials have been frozen, and further investigations have been taken to establish what could be the problem there. And then 628 officials within the Department of the Premier have also been verified. I must mention that the number is high because it also includes the CDW's community development workers, about more than 300 of them. In Cocktail, we have verified 340 officials and 693 within the Economic Affairs Department. And I want to talk to the feeling of post. I may not waste your time, Chairperson, if I will talk to the feeling of post. I have mentioned that there's a process in place that has been followed before post can be filled. If you look at infrastructure expenditure, we have spent 88.7% of our allocated budget, and which is obviously an under expenditure at the end of the namely, as mentioned, Department of Education, Department of Social Development on the substance and drug abuse, and also Department of Health that has spent 94% of its allocated budget. Preliminary provincial spending on social infrastructure amounts to 1.26 billion. Chairperson, if I mention that, I won't talk to the fire department's expenditure. On revenue, Chairperson, we have hit the 1 billion target as a province for revenue collection purposes. We've moved from 800 million in 34 years, and we have now hit this 1 billion, and we believe that we've got a huge potential of increasing our revenue. We've noticed, Chairperson, that the Department of Health has under-collected by 39 million, and this is mainly due to the government of Lesotho that has not paid us this year.
Beyond 3 years.
Over the years, it's accumulating the problems that they're not paying us, and that's the problem we're sitting with. We still have also a challenge with the Minister of Real Estate, but we are resolving that process of ensuring that we've got a valid contract and we agree on how we should have, we should charge the university for.
The Deputy President goes here frequently, you must tell
him. I must mention, Chairperson, that the Department of Police Force and Transport has always been a department that is carrying us. As a province, alone, that department is collecting 70 million of the 1 billion collected in the province. The classification, I would not dwell much into that. Basically, the Department of Health, that 8 million, is made of patient fees, and it's also made of the game auction that could not take place in the previous financial year. We have more of games sold in the current financial year to make up for the revenue that we could not collect in the previous financial year, but that was also as a result of the drought that we prefer for us to withhold instead of auctioning our game. The provincial revenue collection, Chairperson has mentioned that it has grown from 800 to 1 million since 2012. I will not go through that again. We are working closely with Road Accident Fund. We are collecting money from the Road Accident Fund. And we believe that we need assistance with the social, if we can get any assistance to collect money from them. And the joint staff establishment with the University of Africa is within our control, something that we'll be able to resolve this year and make sure that we start collecting for the university. The provincial cash balances, as my colleague has mentioned, that we are sitting with a negative cash balance, or we are sitting with a negative cash balance at the end of the financial year. We have actually maintained over the financial year positive cash balances, but the overexpenditure within the Department of Education normally eats into our cash in that it's salaries that we have to pay them, and we are sitting with that challenge, but we are containing the cost. As mentioned, we are coming from an overexpenditure of what within the previous financial year, and we have housed it within a year, and we believe that over time, because it's something that you can't do within a short space of time, we'll be able to manage and live within the allocated resources. Chairperson, I person the unwanted expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, as well as frequent against expenditure. I was mentioned that unauthorized expenditure in the province was 315 at the end of the financial year, mainly within education. Would solve the problems in education, we would have really solved the problem of unauthorized expenditure in the first stage, and we are getting there, which we've seen over the years. The irregular expenditure, Chairperson, we have recorded a decline of 756 million on irregular expenditure from 2015-16 to 2016-17, and as I've mentioned, we have intervened to make sure that we address the regular expenditure as at 2010 and that project is going very well as it is right now. We are also engaging the CFO, so from the CFO for us, to ensure that every time that monitoring on the regular expenditure, the fruitless expenditure, Chairperson, in the previous financial year, we ended up with fruitless expenditure of 8.8 million. It has now gone down to 2.7 million, Chairperson, and it's as a result of interest on the delayed payments. It's not necessarily fruitless expenditure as a result of the money that would have been used in vain. Late payments, especially within our Department of Education, Department of Health. The accrual is a challenge for us. Whilst they are reducing, we still have a big challenge, Chairperson. Our budget is under tremendous pressure. We know that our budget has been reduced by 1.2 billion in the current NTF period as a result of the budget cut, as well as also capital share data updates. I'll hand over back to my MC for continuing the master.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be pretty quick. I think our provincial intergovernmental debt steering committee has done a lot of work, and it has helped us tremendously to manage the ESCOM payment burden to municipalities. Specifically, we have recently brought police, roads and transport into the Intergovernmental Debt Steering Committee because the debt of municipalities to our government grant has escalated, I think, up to they now over about 750 million. And we can't continue on this way. So the same processes that we followed with ESCOM payment plans, we are now enforcing municipalities also. There must be, where possible, hard cash on the table and then payment plan. So we're trying to assist police road transport to manage back the escalating costs. Otherwise that is going to become a major issue for us. Then I think I've spoken to disaster funding. I think we have broadly accepted that we cannot fund drought disasters in the same way that we fund, for example, a flood. With a flood, it's almost easier. There was a building, and there's a flood, and there's no building. Drought works a bit differently because you have longer-term economic implications that you have to deal with together with the immediate intervention measures. So I think the Budget Council has accepted we need to start thinking and talking around a different model on how we can deal with disaster funding. That does not exclude that we need to look at what has happened, both with agriculture as well as National Disaster Management Center and the Department of Water and Sanitation, on how we dealt with disaster funding currently. I think I just wanted to highlight, I don't think we spend enough time talking about the funding model for local government. I think increasingly, especially in the smaller provinces, municipalities are increasingly under financial strain. We have 22 municipalities is currently under intervention, 159. It's Masilomiana and Mafube. Others might be following. But Mafube's problems are overwhelming at this stage. It's completely financially unviable. It has a zero revenue base. And there isn't even a bigger municipality close to it that you can say, okay, let's look at a possible merger with someone, because you'll just have a bigger corpse. You won't have one live body ultimately. I think on CSD we are beginning to see the benefits on the Office Central Supply database coming through. There are teething problems. We are looking at establishing a provincial CSD user forum. You pick up occasionally that one department manages to pay service provider X today, and there's nothing wrong. When another department tries to pay the service provider, then the service provider, according to the system, suddenly doesn't have tax clearance. So there's something in the system that must be a teething problem on whether it's updates or integration or whatever the nice fancy terms of that technical people use. But it's something that we are talking to National Treasury about. But especially with the SMMEs, there are increasing complaints that we are getting that the CSD is killing them. So it's something we are keeping an eye on. I think it's a year now that CSD is fully operational, that we can begin to look at trends and patterns that are emerging. Actually, yes, I just made mention of the CDWs in the Office of the Premier. I think we are still the only province with CDWs in the Office of the Premier. They are actually with COPTA. It was a pilot study. But as often happens, there's a pilot study and then we don't quite know what happens, but the pilot study sort of gets abandoned and no one then says it has worked, it has not worked, do they stay, do they go back? It's just the way it is now. So with Office of the Premier, when it's the Free State, I think everyone is now tired of being reminded, oh yeah, it's that lot with the CDWs who have extra numbers. In other provinces, you would have us as traditional leaders being part of their offices with the Premier, whereas with us, they would be with COCTA still. So I think the consistency across provinces may be something worth looking at. On own revenue, police roads transport, as CEO said, it's a main driver of own revenue. The one aspect that we need to look at is the triple P model. It's not conducive at this stage. It's too technical, it takes too long to get real beneficial triple P's going. It is a barrier, I think, to get more private investment into public infrastructure. We are looking, for example, now at way bridges. We can't fund them ourselves. Triple P is the only legitimate way to go, really. But it's going to take 2 years, and do we have that time? So we really need to look at the Triple P model to make it more workable. We are busy getting the consolidated report from the NCLP's pre-visit. I think there's a task team in place that's led by the DG. That is coordinating all departments' responses. So I think we are on track for the NCLP visit that will be coming. Our colleague of National Treasury made mention of Wetumelu, Albert Nzula. Albert Nzula will open now on the 15th of June. The opening, I think, is scheduled for 15 June. It will be a phased-in approach. And on Wetumelu, I think mention was also made, actually the Treasury got into that space and brought public works and health together. The contractor that was there that had abandoned site, we officially brought to close the contract. We terminated. There was a new process. There will be a new contractor on site to finish off the outstanding work in a reasonable period of time. The contractor abandoned site, there has been storm damage to the incomplete work. So there will have to be some additional work done. I think those were the main points I wanted to raise, I think I've spoken to the intergovernmental relations issue as well, that we really need to look better at. But if we can find space to discuss the funding model for local government at some stage. I'm just reminded, I was the one who noted this point. I wanted to raise conditional grant frameworks as well. We are seeing an increasing trend where national departments are eating into conditional grants of provinces. Whether they want to take a percentage to increase their own monitoring and evaluation capacity, I think it's something that we need to relook at, the conditional grant framework. What is the money intended for? There is this conditional grant in sport and recreation. For the creation of that national training center in the Free State, it has caused numerous audit problems for the Free State. Now, we need to look at the whole value chain from where the conditional grant starts, what is it intended to create, what is the AG's perspective on it. Actually, that dispute is now between Office of the AG and National Treasury. I think that dispute is going to end up with the Accounting Standards Board. It's about recognition of an asset in progress, which is not going to be a provincial asset, but the AG feels it must be in our books, and we feel, no, it's not going to be in our books, it's in the implementing entity's books until it's finally going to be transferred to Sport Recreation or South Cork is going to be the beneficiary. So from conceptualization to implementation, there's so many stakeholders now involved, but in the end we are the ones sitting with all the audit problems. So there's a loss of appetite for these type of things if this is the way they are going to be implemented.
Mr. Treasury, when you come on in your responses, please address us one as well. Something's not making sense.
I don't think it's even National Treasury can come up with a response. It's an AG issue.
But we must get the way forward. We can't just leave it there. We heard it. Thank you. Bye-bye. We must do something about it. Thank you.
The matter is with the Office of the National Accountant General. If National Accountant General is now busy with that, that's where our dispute obviously ended. But maybe they can talk. Maybe we can also just raise to say the vacancy in the position of Accountant General in National Treasury has created an uncertain accounting environment. We've had numerous disputes, and we are not getting to a stage where these disputes can be resolved. We would want to have an environment which there's consistency and clarity. I think this issue that came up of this odd situation in the Free State with the Tourism Authority and own revenue is exactly one of those examples where the rest of the country is on one page, but the AG in the Free State is on a different page. So if we can get to a position where we have more certainty in the accounting environment, that is going to be helpful for us. But thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Thank you, BBC, and your team for the presentation. We appreciate that. And the detail that you incorporated in your presentation. On the members' questions, I will come in at the end with my matters. Although, I should be the branch and someone, go down the line for a moment, I should be.
No offense, Honourable Chairperson, ladies and gentlemen, maybe I must start by welcoming the presentation. The questions that I'm going to ask and clarities are not based on which hand, but on enhancing good governance and trying to address issues that we think are lacking. Chairperson, my recollection of facts is that the NCOP paid a visit for an example some weeks ago to the province. And our main focus was on health. I was leading another team. It was within Kopanong or Fromsberg. One thing that we learned is that the Department of Health is under Section 18, which basically means Treasury is the one that is running that department. I have something sticking to my mind about the water board that is sailing there. But the water board indicated that it is owed a lot of millions of rands, and that the municipality is trying its utmost best to repay the water board. But at the end of the day, the people who are suffering are the ordinary citizens and residents of that district municipality. There's no water. Even where we slept, we wanted to do it and go back, because we couldn't even just pass. And when we try to question this issue of the water, we were then told, and I'm saying this thing is with reference to the equitable share that the municipality is getting for poor people, because government is paying for 6 kilometers of water and electricity. Now, ordinary people, they are suffering, school children, the state of health and all that in that particular district is a concern. But one major concern was that this district municipality, health, the Department of Health, because all over, the clinics, general crisis of vacancies, and medication is fine. There's enough supply. Ambulances shortage, staff shortage. And when we try to find out, they say, no. Everything is in treasure. They are the ones even who are filling vacancies. And our concern was, the last general election that we had was just in 2014, when the fifth administration came into place. Do you perpetually leave a department to be under administration, even if it is the new administration? Like, for example, the fifth parliament came into existence, found the department under administration and continued. Is it legal to do such a thing? Because the advice that we got on that day from a particular advocate was that it's irregular. You can't keep them under administration when you are also a new administration, because you don't have grounds as to why, as a new administration, you keep them under Section 18. Chairperson, the Free State province is using implementing agents to deliver projects. And one conclusion that comes into my mind is that it's a way of avoiding accounting in terms of the PFMA, because those are no longer now under public funds administration, because they are using implementing agents. If we can get an explanation as to why are you using implementing agents, is it really, of course, the reason for trying to have a way of not following the PFMA? For some time, the Free State has been having a problem with the procurement of IT goods and services. The IT problem in the Free State. For some time, it has been a serious problem. Can you really just take us on board as to what is happening there in terms of this IT thing that all of the Free State? The supply chain management system in the Free State are found to be very uncompetitive and unfair procurement processes, inadequate contract management. Just to set an example, there's a company in one clinic which was contracted to collect waste, and for 2 months they didn't collect waste, but they were paid. These are things that we got present, and that there's also an allegation that the awarding of these contracts are given to Truth family members. The financial situation in terms of education, Chairperson, is very distressing, because the department has outstanding accruals of 380 million. And in 2015, the accruals were at 270 million. And can you please explain to us bank overdraft in the same department of 641 million? Chair, can you also, as Treasury, just explain to us as to why, If all departments in the Free State have submitted their annual reports, and if they have not, because I have information, I'm just waiting for your answer. If they have not, what are the reasons for them not to have submitted their annual reports? Chair, maybe I must stop here and give to my other colleagues, maybe they can cover what I have not covered. But the other thing, the last, with Albert Mzula, which is going to be opened on the 15th of June, the hospital was there for 4 years. Despite the feasibility study that you conducted as because they are under your administration, there was a feasibility study that was conducted. Common knowledge, Chairperson, will tell you that you can't build a road moving out of the freeway. They knew it even before they constructed, but at a later stage, they had to reconstruct a road, which of course caused an inflation of about 100 million. For 4 years, the hospital was not opened, and it escalated to more than 100 million. They knew that they are a water scarce, the shortage of water. The sewage that they upgraded was done at the same time during the construction of the said hospital, Albert Mzula. Now with the vacancies again, they're filling only critical posts. But when you look at the hospital, which is not going to be opened actually, it's going to be opened in phases. They're opening just a phase, not the whole hospital, after 4 years. You would need people who will do laundry. I'm not sure if it's critical. You would need general workers you will need specialists and all doctors, nurses, and I'm not sure, because in terms of what they presented before us, it's only the feeling of critical posts. Maybe in the analysis, they will be able to explain that. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'll touch on the issue of health. You have mentioned that you are opening, I think it's 2 hospitals. So my question is that, when are you opening the other one for academics? And the second one is the issue of police vehicles repairs in Cape. I think maybe if you can provide us with the necessary information, we can be able to ask the minister what is the problem, and also in the issue of truck companies from Bumalang. If you can provide us with the detailed information, we can be able to ask the minister, and also in the issue of agriculture. If you can provide us with the minister, the information, we'll be able to take it further and ask what is the problem. Thank you.
Yes, Peter, thank you. Let me start by also welcoming the people here, and you know, I traveled through the Free State you know, on Saturday, and I listened to them now very carefully. They are planning to increase their income, so I made very sure that I'm not going to be a contributor to that. I put the calm speed control traveling through there. So I'm quite sure, you know, I hope something will not hit me, you know, unexpectedly in the future. I'm going to start, Chairperson, with a presentation that Treasury made, and I just have a few questions here. You know, apparently we are dealing with the very same old issues, where provinces and other places, they are overspending on their personnel budgets, and yet there's an underspending on the actual services. And the old culprits are once again, you know, goods and services, infrastructure, the very same old. Apparently that's the case as well. Treasury mentioned something, and maybe that was just a misunderstanding from my side, that the overspending in other areas led to, you know, funding being taken away from infrastructure-related issues to cover that area. So that was my understanding. I'm not saying that's the factual position. My understanding is that capital budgets are normally ring-fenced budgets. And I just need to get clarity on that, please. That was as far as Treasury's presentation was concerned. Coming then to the presentation done by the province, I was also part of the visit to the Eastern Free State, and I was part of the delegation. We went to Zatron. Now, first of all, that is, yeah, maybe I'm totally lost now. It's the west, okay? I was in Zatron, I promise. Anyway, in Zatron, you need a chopper there. To be able to get around through that street, it's terrible. It's really terrible. It's even worse than that. So, you know, and we also had, we focused on, you know, visiting health facilities. And we were accompanied, and I'm not going to say, you know, specific names or whatever, you know, it's not to embarrass people or whatever. But we had a delegation there from health. And it was quite obvious that these people are not on top of their game. They couldn't answer questions. You know, we sort of forced them, and they even got some more people. And they were still not able to give any responses. Really, I don't know what you're going to do, because, you know, my understanding is that they've been under, you know, Section 18 is applying to them for quite some time, and I don't think that they'll get out there easily. There is one, I think it's a clinic that is under construction in that area. It's a
Rubel.
And you know, nobody knows who's the contractor on that site. Nobody. I mean, the health, you know, eventually they brought people from public work, and they're not understaffed. There were about 7 people. I'm telling you. And not one of them were able to give us any answers. Today, we don't know who are building that place. Apparently, it's under construction for the last almost 10 years. Do you want that? Oh, St. June. Now, the locals are telling us, you know, that they are, you know, carting around with a wheelbarrow some bricks. Today they pick it up on this side of the site and, you know, taking it to the other side, and tomorrow it's just the reverse of that again. So really, that is very serious. We need to get things going there. You know, the service rendered there was very good. In the clinics was excellent. Really, that was excellent. They have enough medicine, stuff like that they have. But once again, you know, everybody is complaining about staff shortages and stuff like that. And the same old problems, as I said, you know, is capital work again. There is a situation, we were told that, you know, obviously there are ambulances, you know, government-owned ambulances, but then they also have a contract with service providers. But apparently it's leading to confusion there. You know, apparently some stuff, and especially the more expensive things, are being dealt with by Buthelezi, and the others are dealt with by the government-owned things. And apparently it leads to confusion to the extent that sometimes people, you know, at an accident, a scene of an accident, they are leaving patients behind. And some person, they died because of that. That is what we were told. I touched on the question of the infrastructure. Then you also in your presentation indicated that you plan to close down some farm schools. Why are you, you know, we do understand your problem. My concern is, where are the children going to? You know, we have vast experience with this. People are closing farm schools, and the local, you know, pupils are not properly catered for. So this is just my appeal that you look into that to make sure that they are not going to be left behind. Chairperson, I'm just about done. Transportation of the patients. Chairperson, I think I'm done. I'm also interested in, you know, what was conveyed to us, you know, the police, the vehicle, stuff like that. I used to spend 40 years in the police, and that is something that we can maybe easily rectify. But I would like to get that information. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Mandy.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think I'd like to start by saying that, you know, this is a general comment, Chair, which also impacts on ourselves as a committee. And that is, Chair, we're not a super committee in terms of our mandate. That we will compensate for sometime wrongdoing, poor judgment, poor decision making, and perhaps even incompetence and inefficiency that are happening in the province. Our mandate is clear to hold whoever are accountable to facilitate solutions and not to make decisions or forced change of decisions that are made on the basis that is provided for by law. I'm saying the chair because I think in 2-3 meetings, people come and sort of lament to the committee, raise issues when they have full mandates and full prescripts that support their mandates. You know, I came late here, Chair, because I was scared to die today out of storm. So I stayed a little bit to see if town is fine, roofs and trees are not falling. So when I called, then I called some of my colleagues, said, no, it's fine, we're going to work. Then I said, okay, I'm coming. So that's the truth, but it was my daughter. I said, no, they can't say we must not go to school and you go to school. So I said, let me delay a bit. So, Chair, I came in when the presentation by the treasurer has been made, but I came in when the MEC was presented, but it was like I joined a meeting where, you know, somebody who's helpless is making a presentation. And this is a political authority, Chair. A political authority that is working within a particular collective. But it's been like lamenting about this not happening, that not happening, and we're not hearing what kind of effective processes that are put in place and plans that are undertaken in dealing with the problems that are faced. I mean, the practical example is this thing on the accounting, this thing of service providers that are outside the province. Those matters, Chair, somewhere somebody with the money has made a decision, and it makes it here. We don't know whether there were representations made to the exco that is responsible. But let me ask a question then, Chair, in terms of also that matter on intergovernmental relations. Intergovernmental relations, Chair, is not a national competence only, it's a concurrent competence. Everybody, right down the line of governance in the state, is bound to practice and exercise intergovernmental relations. What I mean, Chair, it relates to the fact that, and I would need clarity on that one, maybe even from the colleagues here, Chair. This bill that MEC is referring on, that they are not signing, and I'm not privy to, I might have missed some detail on it, as to what bill and what delays the first step to do it, because the role of the legislature, Chair, is to resolve such matters. That's the mandate. There's no engagement of what are the problems with the bill. The bills are drafted and suggested by the administration, but informed by policy, and there's political ownership. So somehow we need to know what are the concerns on the content of the bill, but also what engagements that were made to the sponsor, the political sponsor of that bill. Chair, meetings, if they were held, they're not, and I mean, not here, but does this MEC is, I don't know, I hope she's new, because what I'm hearing is that she's not participating in the MINMEC of treasury. Maybe I must ask a question, if there are meetings of the MINMEC, and I guess, Chair, we would have been in a better situation if our chairs, I don't know if you don't, but I know that other chairs that do attend MINMEC, COCTA, for instance, they do attend the MINMEC of COCTA, the chairs from Parliament, as ex officio members. So perhaps it's something that we must follow as well, but that our leadership in the committee to attend these treasures MINMEC, if they are there, so that then sometimes we don't come here when people are pleading for our intervention and when we have similar mandates with them. So I think it's important to underscore that point. And then also to ask a question on this section 18, to zoom in on what Honorable Mutla Shupin and Ogi, you know, are concerned about. That who is responsible for the capacity, once you set up the terms and the memorandums, you know, with the department that you are now using in section 18, is it solely based on the fiscal position or the finances of the department and the lack or and the lack thereof on performance, but no concern of capacity and the ability to build that capacity? Who takes responsibility to build that capacity so that Honorable Chair Blanche said that the people from health looked like had no capacity and they're not likely to get out of it. So do we know, those of us who have rights to exercise Section 18 and take over the administration of the department, do we know what do? We just looking at the financial position and then we think that those people are right, and yet it was us as a department that has imposed Section 18 or has put in place Section 18 that, you know, when we get satisfied that they've now accounted, we've now controlled their finances enough, and then we release them and they go back to the same position of not having capacity to maintain the position that you've left them on. I think it's important to get to that one. Now, Chair, we pay almost 50 billion, roughly approximately 50, 48, 47 billion to Customs Union, which includes Lesotho. But what, we're not privy. We must want to intervene and ask whoever, but we're not privy to what is the actual contract of, or the agreement of payment, and why is it not enforceable, and why must it become a matter, a real serious matter for almost 3 years? Do we deal them after, you know, the detail of that contract? Surely there should be some planned payment arrangements and those kind of things, and what is the feedback? So, because we can't hear from Treasury, we can't, the suit is not paying, and it's a lament, Chair. And what do? We just a select committee here. So we go and ask the Treasurer National, the Minister there, why are you not getting the money in the suit? Why don't you send a sheriff? What? And that's not, you know, so these things are guided by certain mandates and prescriptions, Chair. That's the point I'm underscoring. To say then that, and what the other one, Chair, that relates to this, that I need to ask a question, general question on it, is the question that says, you know, in the department, who is new and who has been there for quite some time, Chair? If they could give us a breakdown. Is this HOT new? I would like to assume that the MEC is new. You know, not more than 2 years. I don't know. I didn't follow that part of the way she was. But if she's more than 2 years, she's as liable as all of them that are old in the department. Now, why I'm raising that point, because, you know, you hear, let's take the question. My question is also contextualized on the basis that they say that they are only working on the modalities of the contract with the university. Only now, the validity and all those questions that they are raising on the university for payment. Surely, I don't know if this service just new, started last week or this past financial year. Before then, the services were not charged or whatever the situation was. But then how long this question of this contract is going to be sorted. And then the other one, Chair, they mentioned something, I might reference it wrongly, but they said, I don't know where, what the context of it, because I couldn't pick it up from the written scripts that they present, they forwarded, but they say that they, in the program 6, they underspend on program 6 infrastructure. And there it's because they are investigations and people that are suspended. But Chair, when we are at this level, we've got to know what are the solutions. I think that's the point I'm trying to emphasize, Chair. What are the solutions? Because surely we don't have a super committee to provide all solutions yet. And that message must not go all out there, because then you are in the media to say, no, the matter is with the select committee in Cape Town. Meanwhile, for us, it's only to recommend to whoever, hey, please do action there. Please conclude that matter. Please undertake to do this, commit to do that, to that. I mean, that is how we continue to monitor whether people do what we've asked them to do. But at the end of the day, whoever is supposed to perform and execute duties and conclude them, they've got to do it. They've got to, for us, it's only to remove stumbling blocks only, nothing else. But when we're not providing, we're not resolving and solving things that are not of our, in the nature of the mandate that we are holding. So that's the question. Then
remember, you have to start wrapping up because the challenge is meetings running at 12:30 as well.
All right.
So please start wrapping up. There's now 30 questions being posed to Vista.
All right, so no, let's hear maybe some of the questions that I still have will be answered, will somehow be touched on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. From me, looking at the national picture that the Minister of Finance engaging with the CEOs of companies in South Africa, we call it the CEO Initiative. Is there such an initiative in the Free State? I'm asking this question to every province. Somewhere this must be boiled down to grassroots level in each province if we want economic growth, the buy-in of the private sector. Secondly, the anti-corruption task team, they call it the ACT team. Do you make use of them in terms of the investigations you refer to? Lastly, coming back to our pre-visit in the Southern Free State to that district municipality, where we were deployed just from Ruval and Smithfield, two matters arise. The one was energy. But that one of the buildings, the clinics of the hospital, have solar energy. And they say they've got lots of sunshine there. That's what those people build out. So that is a way to go. Secondly, shortage of water, but no one is harvesting rainwater. Some of the buildings don't have gutters. It makes the water just run away. But we are complaining we don't have enough water. We don't build up reserve water. So I think that is a route also to take. We engage there with the departments officials of health, but that we mentioned it here to the Treasury that's overseeing the department at this stage. Lastly, on drought relief, I'm asking and requesting that the HOD of Treasury in the Free State link up with the HOD of Agriculture in the Northern Cape, Mr. Fayoun Mutibi. And NEC Norman Shushu of Agriculture. They submitted to the National Department of Agriculture a presentation of how Northern Cape will go about in the distribution of the drought relief. And that presentation I brought to the Select Committee on Appropriations when we dealt with the Division of Revenue Bill and presented and submitted it to the Select Committee. And there was intervention by the National Treasury, this is Wendy Fanu, that engaged with the National Department of Agriculture about this submission. And with that intervention from National Treasury, this submission was approved by the National Department of Agriculture. We were waiting and waiting and waiting and nothing is happening. And it's officials blocking it in Pretoria. And we made an intervention by way of submitting the presentation by calling and sending emails. The last batch of draft relief was delivered last week in my constituency in Defosfontein. It's May. The money was approved in November by this parliament. Draft relief money, funding. Why this long process? And those departments, that department's coming here to account. And I had a meeting this morning with the Select Committee Chairperson Agriculture to sensitize him, to call them, that we review this whole process of distribution, specific in the rural areas. MEC, to you and your team, you can reply after that Treasury. I'm going to give the free state 20 minutes, and I'm going to give 10 minutes to the National Treasury. So, MEC, over to you.
Thank you. I'll reply to some of these issues, and actually will reply to others. If there are outstanding matters, it can be part of what we will be, information we will be submitting. Let me just start on some of the governance issues that were raised. The water scarcity of Gariep is a well-known problem. It is not only that it is the drought, it is generally a drier area. If we want to go back into history, we need to look at starting from Gariep Dam, how was the distribution network designed that it excluded the people from Gariep benefiting from the same dam? There's no distribution network from Gariep Dam into Gariep itself. That is a broader issue that we've been raising with water and sanitation, but it's not something that's going to be resolved overnight. The current problem here, there is significant cash challenges.
We're pumping in the Northern Cape water into the Kalahari for 250 kilometers by way of a pipeline. Now, if it's done there, why can't it be done in the Southern Free State? We pump it from the Vaal River, Pahamahara pipeline. It's the same principle, it's the same government. We'll take it further through the NCOP. Thank you.
That
sorry.
That is underwater and sanitation.
Yes.
There is significant financial issues in the Kopanong local municipality, much similar to other municipalities in Northern Cape. It's huge distances, little people, little revenue base. What we have asked National Treasury is to look, for example, at the increases in tariffs between Bloemwater, Sedibeng Water, and Rand Water. Those are the three water boards operating in the Free State. They each have their own price increases, tariff increases. But it's not the same tariff increase. There is nothing the Free State can do about it. It's a matter that water and sanitation has to look at. It's their competence. But it affects our municipalities directly. So yes, we are trying to assist to facilitate discussions between Bloemwater and Kopanong, but it is placing enormous strain also on Bloemwater to continue rendering service. I think they are now still working on the restriction of water scale and model that they use when it comes to the outstanding payment, it's not going to resolve the problem in the near future. The money is owed, arrear debt of Kopanong is significant. And no, Free State is not going to assist them to pay off the debt. It's a bigger problem that we need other interventions to assist. When it comes to the Department of Health, they are a bit like the Department of Education. When it suits them, they blame Treasury to say, no, we are not filling vacancies because of Treasury. They don't tell us, but we are not the ones who are able to identify for them which posts they need. If they need nurses, clinic managers, those kind of operational posts, it's really the department who identifies and follows the processes for recruitment and selection. The HR delegations are with the Department of Health, not with Treasury. It's only to open Bershaw that it follows the Treasury process. So when it comes to especially the medical posts, whether it's medical, it's abroad, whether it's a specialist, a doctor, a nurse, and critical posts, especially hospitals, but could even include porters, because if you don't have enough porters, you directly affect your theatre time.
Yeah.
Patients don't get to theatre in time, doctors are standing around waiting for beds. A critical post in health doesn't mean a critical post, for example, in treasury. We understand all of that. So they are the ones who must prioritize which posts are they filling. But equally, in many of these small areas, it is difficult to attract the necessary skills. People do not necessarily want to live in rural. They don't necessarily want to live in Philippolis or in Frankfurt or in Cornelia. And we can mention so many of these towns.
Even in Garif, we met.
You struggle. But the people that we have in the clinics, that nursing, I think it's the clinic manager or the nurse who was in charge of the rural clinic, two, 3 years ago, was awarded the best clinic manager in South Africa. They are exceptionally committed to the work that they do. That no one can doubt that. To retain and to attract the skills is a different story. So we can look at the overall the profile. It will be part of the task team that is preparing for the Garif visit anyway. We will deal with all those issues. So we don't want to look into the smaller issues. On the intervention itself, we work with the state law advisors to draft our agreements between Treasury and the affected department to outline clearly who is responsible for what. What are the time frames? So we have heard the story of the Section 18 concerns. We've heard the story that between administrations it automatically should have terminated. We are not in agreement with that. But I think when we go towards the Garif visit, we will address that. The issue of procurement of IT goods and services, I'm not sure what the member is actually referring to, whether there's specific instances. In general, we know that the procurement of IT goods and services is a CETA competency. So we would be identifying our needs, engaging with CETA, they run the process, which is, yes, in many instances, is unacceptably long, there are unacceptable delays, and it is expensive. We've raised it before to say a laptop through CETA will cost you 15,000, whereas you can walk into Incredible Connection and it will cost you 7,000, same laptop. So explain to us where are the differences. It's not lamenting, it's a national competency. On the uncompetitive procurement systems and contract management in-house, I just looked up the figures now. In the 15-16 financial year, there were 41 instances identified where there was, which was listed by the Office of the AG as procurement involving close family members. There were only 37 actual transactions. Out of that, only one involved an official in the state accounting environment, not even in procurement. The rest of it was all in the operational environment, the family members, whether it's a medical officer, a nurse, emergency care unit worker, those type of things. So we can look at that. Where there are actual real findings, that would have been under investigation, because every year we share that list, AG shares it with us, we distribute to the departments to say we want a report. Is it actual conflict of interest or is it perceived conflict of interest? If a family member, for example, is a cleaner, how would that person have been able to influence a procurement process? So it's one thing for people to have perceptions, it's a different thing for it to have been an actual conflict of interest that needs further action. We will go back and see what out of that 41 instances and the 37 actual transactions, what has been the actions taken by the Department of Health. On annual report, yes, indeed, there are departments that are still not submitted. I've made reference to the disputes with the AG. At this stage, I think it's Agriculture, Rural Development, DESTIA, Human Settlements. I'm not sure who else, I can't remember clearly who else is affected. Treasury subsequently asked Speaker for referral, although we didn't withdraw the dispute. Sport, Arts, Culture, and Recreation. So yes, there are departments, but these disputes with the AG, they are all in different stages of being addressed. What I referred to earlier with the dispute that is now between National Treasury and Office of the Auditor General, that is part of this dispute. Under the book, concerning those issues, we're not going to go into details of. We will submit the other additional information. The farm schools concern, it is not a new project that we've started. Many farm schools have closed. What has happened is that education did not do the paperwork to officially close it, but then there were another batch that we identified which was underutilized. You will remember from a few years ago we increased our investment in the school hostels program. Where we close, we are trying to make sure that the children affected will be taken up in the school hostel environment so that they don't fall through the cracks. So we can probably share some information with the committee on the farm schools. I think the member came in late, maybe he didn't understand the context in which we were raising very specific issues. Let me just emphasize that what we are raising is, when it comes to the provincial socioeconomic profile, the issues that we were raising are issues where national departments enter their own supply chain processes, and it results in this situation, for example, the Eastern Cape issue where all our police vehicles, whether it's repairs or services, is done in the Eastern Cape. There's not much the Free State can do with it because it's a national department's procurement process. Similarly, the other instances that we've mentioned, those are national department procurement processes. It's not a Free State issue. The legislation that I referred to is we are the ones refusing to pass the legislation. We're not lamenting about it. We are telling you we have not passed the legislation. And until the IGR processes have been corrected, we are not going to pass the legislation. The licitation issue is an inter-country agreement that National Health is involved in. But there is no assistance from either DIRCO or from National Health or National Treasury when it comes to the actual debt collection. Because it's not the only problem, province who has the problem, the same problem. And it's not only Lesotho. Gauteng is differently affected because the neighboring countries involve different countries. We would have to ask Lesotho why are they not paying. They are presumably not paying because they have the same cash flow challenges than we have as provinces and as a country. I think our engagement with Lesotho has assisted. But it is an ongoing process. But it is a typical example of where there is a national competency and in the execution of it, provinces are the ones that carry the burden. We are the ones accepting the patients. The options are very limited. Are we supposed to then say, okay, because the city is not paying, we are sending away their patients? We can't just refuse treatment. It is unfortunately not that easy. University of the Free State Joint Staff Establishment. It's nothing new. It comes from a number of people, but as it evolves, it gets reviewed, and from both sides, there are different expectations. So, as in any process, we would be claiming from them on a regular basis. They would dispute certain amounts. They would also not be comfortable with actual payments, and they might prefer looking at offsetting other debt. So it's a complicated process, but it's nothing new. Though it affects our anticipated revenue. That is the only context. I don't think the committee is able to do anything about it. We are also not asking you to do anything about it. It's just one of those things that I'm sure all provinces to some degree have the joint staff establishment arrangements, especially when it comes to the medical schools. It's a very sensitive subject between health and the universities. University also claims independence and autonomy when it comes to procurement procedures, recruitment procedures. Whereas the department might feel if the burden of payment is on them, they want to have a specific say. But the context in which that was raised is the effect it has on our anticipated revenue. Not that we expect the committee to do anything about it. I think on the issues, yes, Chairperson, a similar type CEO initiative council exists. It's often led by Office of the Premier and the CEO. We've established the Black Business Council specifically. There's also an SMME forum that has been established. So there are regular engagements. We also do sector engagements. For example, we recently, there was a meeting with all mechanics, car repair industry type people. Then we would engage with everyone in the catering industry, or with everyone in the tourism and accommodation industry. We do a lot of sector-focused engagements, not just the big forum meetings or association meetings, to get to the real problems or challenges that people in the industry experience. The anti-corruption task team, I don't think we have formal arrangements with them at this stage. Normally what our processes would involve is our investigation reports, when they are referred for further action, we have a direct relationship with the NPA. That is something we could look at. But the investigation in education currently, it's a service provider. It's not the anti-corruption task team. And then I think on the issues of energy and water harvesting, we have been discussing with Public Works to say it must become standard to their building specifications, that there must be provision for rainwater harvesting and the solar energy, so that we can relieve the burden of the normal grid. Gharib is intended there's a big solar park that will be developed in close to Betuli. It will, on completion, it should be the second largest in Africa, in the world, something like that. But yes, the sunlight there is a potential enormous money spinner when it comes to the solar energy industry. Also, it's not a short-term project. It will be implemented over a number of years, but I think the investors have been secured, and they are in the process of finalizing contracts at this stage. So we hope that project, it will be one of our catalytic projects. We hope that within the next year, we will be approaching being on the ground with implementation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Good.
Okay, thank you very much. I think MEC has covered a number of questions that were raised by all of our members. Chairperson, in response or in addition to the MEC's response on Department of Health appointments, we have gone through an exercise with the department and also assisted by the National Department of Health, where we are looking at the staffing of Department of Health. have vacancies in those areas. Now, one of the other dynamics that we have to take into account while talking about the vacancies within the Department of Health is the fact that, as we have presented today, Chairperson, the Department of Health have spent 99.9% on its CO compensation of employees. So there is that restriction also, basically constraints. You know, it would mean that we need to focus more on ensuring that we right-size our institutions. Those that have more people, we give them with the staff that they need, the minimum staff that they need, and get people in environments where we do not have people at all. So it's just that process, but we must also take it into account that the department is already overburdened with COE at 29.9% at the stage. So it's just a warning for us as we talk about the filling of vacancies within the Department of Health. And the honorable member Shuping also raised a concern about this Section 18. And our experience, and I believe it's the same experience that National Treasury has when it took over the BOPO process. If you take an institution under administration, the people that have been taken under administration, they will generally be unhappy. And I would not expect anything positive to come out of the interaction. If we would have been there, you could have came back with different responses for some of the questions that you raised. Now, all the that I'm saying is that we did not find the department under administration, and we continued or perpetuated the situation. We have literally put the department under administration. The situation in the department, before we took the department under administration, before the end of the financial year, it was actually in August, September, already they had exhausted the finances that were appropriated to the department. We had to literally, we used the MSC's garage as a point where we could ask people to donate blankets so that we can take them to hospitals. You know, the medical consumables, people were donating. You know, the situation was terrible in our health institution. We were always in the newspapers. So the intervention that the Treasury brought into the Department of Health, and the National Treasury can bear witness, we have really changed that department. It was dysfunctional, completely. So there's a lot, if we are to present what we have done into that in that department, we can present. And we have presented to even to their audit committee. They are happy with the intervention. And we wanted to get out of the environment because it's quite strenuous, to be honest with you. It's quite strenuous for us. It takes a lot of resources and time out of Treasury to run with some of the responsibilities of health, education. We're also having an oversight of municipalities. So I'm just addressing this issue of the Department of Health, Section 18, and the responses that we have received. But a lot of positive things have happened in the Department of Health, and that department, you know, couldn't be sitting here where it is. It could have been at 99.9% in the first 6 months of the year. And the implementation of agents, implementing agents that have been utilized to avoid PFMA. I must indicate that we have taken a position, given our engagement with the Auditor General as a province, that we would not utilize implementing agents in the province moving forward. However, that would also come with other challenges and slow spending, and arrangement that we had with Auditor General, with the current contract, was that Auditor General should also audit the processes that were followed by those implementing agents to make sure that at least we did not compromise PFMA, our systems of procurement were fair, transparent, and we observed those principles. However, there was a decision in principle by the political principals in the province that look, in the best interest of the province and the challenges that we've had with Auditor General, let us withdraw the implementing agent. And obviously, it would have all over implementing agents are utilized. It's a reality. Most probably, we have utilized them more extensively than any other province, I believe. But the principal decision has been taken moving forward. We are not continuing with implementing agents in the province. And the uncompetitive and unfair inadequate contract management within the province. MEC has just spoken to awards to people who are close to family members that are close to officials in government. But over and above that, we have a system in the province, honorable chairperson for you. The system that we're utilizing forces the officials to rotate the service providers when they ask for quotation. Initially, there would have been this complaint that continuously, when quotations are requested, they are quoted from particular service providers. Other people would be on the database, but they would never even be called to provide a quotation to government. Now, we have a new system that we're utilizing. It forces all the departments, and they cannot override that system. So that is one way of ensuring that our processes are more competitive, are more transparent, and fair. And that system on its own also has got a contract management motion. Because it's true, this is one area where we have definitely failed. I believe government has failed on contract management. If you look at the number of contracts that government would have, and some of them would have expired, and some would not have contracts, but we are continuing to get a service from service providers and all that. We've got a module now, and we are forcing the department to utilize that module. We have actually last week issued letters, non-compliance letters to the departments that we have realized are not utilizing the system or are not adequately utilizing the system. So we are monitoring that through our key control matrix. And we'll follow up, everything, I believe, on the medical waste supplier who has been paid but does not deliver the service. We are not aware of that, but we'll definitely make a follow-up. We'll accordingly report to the MEC, and I believe the MEC will then report back to the chairperson of the committee. And Albert Nzula, I think there was a question around Albert Nzula that there's a road that was never foreseen that it to be constructed, and that the water scarcity, the sewer upgrade, and just to put these things into perspective, Chair, all these things were not done concurrently with the construction of the way, of the hospital. There was indeed poor planning, we agree. There was poor planning to some extent on the construction of the hospital, in that the sewer upgrade was not foreseen. It's something that came later. And that the sewer infrastructure of the municipality would not be able to carry the load that comes from the hospital. We have made funds available. We have done what we're supposed to do to ensure that now the municipality can carry the capacity. The construction of roads, I believe, is one of those things that we're not foreseen, and I'm not certain the MEC. And yes, it took us time to start operationalizing the hospital, and as MEC has indicated, it will be operationalized from the 15th of June in phases, of course, mainly because of the financial constraints. We must admit, over the past 4 or 5 years, there's continuously been cuts on our provincial budget, and that calls for certain decisions to be taken in order to be able to be within the means or the budget that has been provided. The Zastrom Road, I'm not sure exactly which road is that.
The road in the town.
In the town, okay. So it's a municipal road.
Yeah.
Okay. The municipality, but it's one of those municipalities without a revenue base, but we'll see what we can get out of it. But it's a very poor municipality. Perhaps some of the roads must just be turned into gravel. Yes, it's an option. If you don't have money, it's an option. Maybe
you pay.
Yeah, either pay or turn it into gravel. Then they use it. Can be,
Honourable members, there's no time for follow ups. So I don't want to do it, but I must do it. Let me cut you short. I'm in your trouble here.
Thank you very much. Okay.
I think you are under time constraints. You want us to continue?
No, reply to the questions that were posed, but I'm not allowing a second round.
The farm schools, MEC has responded to that, that we're moving kids to the hostels, and I'll just indicate just for record purposes that already we have reduced our farm schools from 527 to 227 between 2010 and 2017. And that has worked well for us in managing the cost of employees, especially that farm schools would have a very low teacher-learner ratio. So if you take them to the hostels, those kids, then at least you are able to rationalize when it comes to allocation of staff for teaching purposes. And I want to talk to Ms. Sotu, and she has spoken to that. And the solutions for infrastructure, honorable member was concerned that we've actually put a problem on the table, but we are not coming up with a solution. I must mention that we have already had an improvement plan for infrastructure spending within the Department of Education, and that we have now, whilst the funds were committed late, we've fully committed the funds within the Department of Education to an extent that we presented last week to National Treasury, and National Treasury approved all of us to the level of 181 million. It's because already we have committed those funds, we have contractors appointed, and they are on fund. So we would be able to address that problem. We are not just raising it and then not necessarily following up on what needs to happen. I believe, let me see, in short, those are the questions I wanted to respond to. Thank you.
I think, Sir Chair, except for the rural clinic, it's one of our massification programs. In other words, there is no contractor appointed. So public works should have people on site for the actual supervision. But like I indicated, I think all the related issues that was picked up from the visit, we will be responding to as part of the DG's process. But thank you very much.
That will also come out during that week's visit, taking Parliament to the people in the session by the NCP. Mrs. Karekwa, over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Starting with the first question on overspending and underspending on HEPSA by the Honourable Members. That, what basically we're saying is that the department overspent on compensation of employees and then underspent by 300 and odd million on capital. So if you look at it, basically it means just use the cash for that capital to pay for the salary. Because at the end of the financial year, the department had an overdraft of 427. So that shows that they don't have money. That's not necessarily that they use the budget, but they use the cash because the spending, the budget does still show that there's an underspending expenditure at the end of the financial year. But if you have to ask the education now, where's the cash that they underspend with? I'm not even sure whether they can show it because they had an overdraft at the end of the financial year. I think the other issue maybe that I put the one of drought relief that the MEC raised is that yes, there were challenges with this one, but because we are planning to visit the province soon, I think probably this month will give the MEC the proper response at that meeting in this regard, because we know that there were challenges with regards to how the information flowed regarding that drought relief. But this one does not, I think this one is not the one. But the one of agriculture, I think there were food that delivery within even the province, across the district in the province last financial year, because there was money made available to the national department to deal with that matter. I think the other one maybe that I want to kind of talk a bit about it also is the issue of conditional grant framework. Especially the one of where national departments take a certain percentage of the grant to deal with their either monitoring of the grant. So most of the time, this issue, the national department cannot just take the money and decide that we're going to use it for monitoring purposes. They need to ask from the sector that is responsible, whether in that case was, I think, or whatever the culture to say, we need this money. Now, the sector needs to agree. Most of the time, they need to agree as a sector to say, yes, you can take it, but it's not something that they can just on their own. Because even from our side, we don't actually agree with the national department to just take funds and use it for the purpose not intended for. So they must agree with the sector. The problem that we are having is that most of the time, the provincial department, whether it's your road or any department, they will agree at that meeting. But now, they don't tell the treasurer that we agreed with our national department. And because we've had that kind of situation before, where like in the case of the road maintenance grant, the provincial treasurer is saying, but why can't you say we must upgrade our roads or build new roads to this grant? But when we go to the sector meeting, it was agreed that that grant is for that purpose, and everybody agreed. But when they go back to their province, or either those people, when they went to the meeting, they just keep quiet. They don't raise their objection to whatever that is being said. So I think this is one of the challenges that we're having with our provincial colleagues, that some of them tend to keep quiet when such decisions are taken or are recommended, because I would assume that at the end, they must be taken to min-max of those particular sectors. The other issue, maybe just to comment briefly, the issue of, I think, the one that the MEC is referring to, we need to improve the intergovernmental system or relations. I think that relates to the stopping, that we stop the infrastructure grant in education. Well, I think, like Sivaji said, sometimes when provinces, those provinces that are benefiting, they don't complain. And I would say, I would think that, well, it was before her time, but even Princess has benefited before in this process without necessarily us, let's say, writing letters. But we take a point that it's courtesy to tell it because the Division of Revenue does not require us to write, but it requires the national department to inform that department that is taking the money from to say, please inform that department. But we are saying, as part of courtesy, I think it's just courtesy to for the minister to write from our side as part of improving the intergovernmental relations. I think that the others of the audit issues will take them back, so because some of them don't have information, but we know that there are issues really that still need to be sorted out between our Office of the Accountant General and the AG, like the issue that I raised in the area of the gaming board revenue. It's a serious issue for us because what it does to the total provincial revenue is that it makes it less, as if we are present under policy. So those are the really, really serious issues that need to be sorted out by the Office of the Accountant General and the AG. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for National Treasury, MEC. Thank you for your presentation, your commitment for being here. Yes, there is a MINMAC, they call it the Budget Council. It meets four times a year. The next meeting, if I'm correct, is the 14th of July. And that's where the nine MECs are present with the nine HODs. The Minister and Deputy Minister of Finance, the whole team, Treasury top management with the FFC, and then twice a year there's meetings called the Budget Forum where SALGA and the Minister and Deputy Minister of COCTA attends as well as the MECs for COCTA in the nine provinces. So that is the MINMAC and extended MINMAC, if you want to call it, as also captured in the Division of Revenue on the specific page referring to the consultation process compiling budget, linked to the Cabinet Committee dealing with the budget. So that is the whole picture regarding that. Well, members, it's very crucial that we bear in mind the effect of fiscal consolidation that was announced by the Minister of Finance, the effect of that on the two major departments, health and education, in all nine provinces and at national level. It's going to have an effect, seeing the expenditure ceiling over the next 2 years, seeing what happened yesterday in the announcement by Stats SA regarding economic growth, that we will have, as I said, yeah, speak to you, have a revised fiscal framework tabled in October during the MTPBS. We must prepare ourselves for that and maybe stricter budget controls. Thank you very much for your attendance. We're going to release, we've still got minutes to do. So we're not going to keep you, the wind is blowing very strongly outside. We're going to do the minutes, please, honourable members, the minutes of the 31st of May. It was circulated by the Secretariat. It's the minutes of the briefing of the National Treasury on the Provincial Budget and Expenditure, 2016-17, referring to the Bofor and Northern Cape, and after that we dealt with the post-intervention the Bofor. I put the honourable members page 1.
Okay.
Are you with me, honourable members?
Yeah.
I put the that's only the judgment who was in attendance. I put you page 2. That was the presentation. As well as page 3 was the presentation. And page 4, that was the 31st of May. Can I get a mover for adoption? Honorable Dr. Shipping moves for adoption, a seconder. Honorable Dr. Blanc seconds. The other one is the 24th. The 24th of May, that was again on the provincial budget. It was Eastern Cape and Northwest. 24th of May was the meeting. Page 1 is the capturing of who was attended. Page 2 is the presentation. And page 3 is the closing. Move for adoption. Seconder. Honorable Martin Shipping second. Thank you. The other one is the 10th of May, Shalani.
Yes, sir.
We're working backwards. The 10th of May, we dealt with the Twin Peaks and the consideration of the report on the Twin Peaks in outstanding minutes. Page 1. Captured correctly. Page 2 was the cross by cross by National Treasury, Mr. Hofferman. And page 3 for closing remarks. Move for adoption, honorable members. Excuse me. Honorable Martha Shipping moves. A seconder. The business of the day, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Now I'm